This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. So what would your picture of a healthy diet look like? How would you craft a diagram to guide schools, families, and children to learn healthy eating habits? It turns out this is a lot more complicated than it sounds.
And it's important because 2 out of 3 Americans are overweight. And given that obesity leads to a host of health problems, from heart disease to diabetes, an easy-to-follow guide to healthy eating is not only convenient, it could actually save lives.
Which is why the U.S. Department of Agriculture has embraced the challenge. Remember the government's food pyramid? It was with us for decades. It put bread, cereal, rice, and pasta on the bottom. Then as you moved up, vegetables, fruit, and then similar smaller portions of meat and dairy, and so on as you moved up toward the top.
But critics said the pyramid made no sense. It was too complicated and failed to promote healthy eating. So this year, the FDA released a much simpler guide called My Plate. As the name implies, it's a plate divided into 4 sections. 2 of them are filled with fruits and vegetables, the other 2 with grains and protein, with a glass of milk off to the side. Here's how First Lady Michelle Obama introduced it earlier this year.
This is a quick, simple reminder for all of us to be more mindful of the foods that we're eating. And as a mom, I can already tell you how much this is going to help parents all across the country.
Simple, easy to understand, and healthy.
But maybe too simple, and maybe not so healthy. That's the position of one of our next guests, who's put together what he says is a much better design called the Healthy Eating Plate. Walter Willett is a professor of epidemiology and nutrition at the Harvard School of Public Health, where he chairs the Department of Nutrition. And welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Good to be with you.
So what's wrong with the government's My Plate diagram? Doesn't it represent an improvement over that old pyramid?
You might say it's an improvement because the old pyramid was really giving people wrong information. It was telling people to avoid all types of fat in their diet and load up on carbohydrate, whatever kind of carbohydrate it was. And we've learned that that's actually metabolically bad for us.
Right.
The new pyramid, the new plate, though, just doesn't provide the detail of information that people need to make healthy choices. For example, it says eat grains. Well, that could be, you know, Wonder Bread and white rice and white pasta, things that actually provide a lot of empty calories and are related to higher risk of diabetes and heart disease. On the other hand, it could have been encouraging use of whole grains, and that can actually be good for us. And the same with the what they call the protein area and even the vegetable area. The plate really fails to make the distinctions that are important for people's health.
It has, as we mentioned, a glass of dairy off to the side. You're not wild about that part of it, right?
The plate really implies that we should be having a glass of milk at every meal. And this is a complicated area. There's some good effects, some benefits of dairy, but it also seems that high dairy consumption may be related to risk of several cancers. So I think that this idea that we should be having 3 servings a day is not based on any data. In fact, there's lots of data to show that that does not reduce fracture risk, which is the main justification usually given for high dairy consumption. And there may be some down effects.
So is the sort of basic problem here, I mean, you're specific there, but it sounds too like it's oversimplistic in your view.
It is oversimplistic, but I think that's not by just oversight or mistake. The mission of the USDA, which produced this plate, is really to get Americans to eat more of the major commodities produced in the United States. And they just can't say, eat less red meat or eat less cheese, eat less refined grains. Politically, that's very hard or impossible for them to do.
So really, it's the influence of these large of agricultural interests that have influenced, to some degree, this plate, you would say.
Unfortunately, there's a complex array of interests that are operating that I think are represented in this plate.
So, Professor Willett, let's talk about your healthy eating plate and how it improves on this. At first glance, it looks very, very similar, but there are some significant differences, right?
Yes, we borrowed on the USDA design. I think the idea of a plate and even dividing it into these 4 sections is pretty reasonable. And they did do some testing and found that people did like this fairly simple design. But what we've done is just added some distinctions. For instance, in the protein section, we indicate that we should really minimize intake of red meat, and we should be emphasizing a mix of vegetable sources of protein like nuts and beans and some fish and some poultry. You can add in some eggs. That's going to be a much better mix of proteins than loading up on red meat several times a day.
The dairy, the glass of dairy is gone, replaced by water. Drink water, tea, or coffee with little or no sugar. for example. And then you also have off to the left healthy oils, right?
Yes. My plate is silent on fats of all type, and that's really too bad because fats are going to be used by people for many different purposes, and the type of fat really makes a big difference with regard to our long-term health and well-being.
Well, listeners, you can take a look at both the plate that Professor Willett was talking about there, which is called the Healthy Eating Plate, as well as the My Plate from the government. That's at RadioBoston.org. We're talking about healthy eating, how to encourage it, and how to sum it up in a way that's quick and easy to understand. We're wondering if you've seen the government's My Plate picture, and do you find it helpful? As I mentioned, you can see it on our website. You can also give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And find us on Facebook and Twitter and Radio Boston. I want to introduce a couple more guests. First, from Yale University in New Haven is Rafael Perez Escamilla. He's a professor of epidemiology and public health at Yale and served on the committee that helped develop some of the guidelines for the government's My Plate diagram. And Professor Escamilla, great to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Also with us is Jody Adams. She's chef owner of Rialto Restaurant in Cambridge, as well as a longtime advocate of healthy and delicious eating. And welcome, Jody Adams. Great to have you.
It's great to be here.
Professor Escamilla, let me start with you. You heard Walter Willett's critique of My Plate. Does My Plate move us in the right direction, in your view?
I think it does. I think it is a huge improvement in relationship to the pyramids that we've had before. And I also think that it is important for the listeners to understand that My Plate is not intended to provide all the information in and by itself simply with the icon. My Plate needs to be used together with ancillary materials, including the internet. There is a ton of information at myplate.gov where the public can click at the different groups presented in the plate and find extremely useful information about very healthy options to follow a healthy dietary pattern.
Practically, so it's deliberately simple, you're saying?
Remember that, you know, when we talk about communicating health to the public, if you present very complicated diagrams with a lot of words, with a lot of information, you may end up losing the key messages by doing that. And remember that the guidelines are intended to be followed by everybody over 2 years of age in the country. So we want also the children to be able to learn from the icon of My Plate.
Jody Adams, I want to get you in on this conversation. Here's my question to you, and Professor Escamilla sort of touched on it. And the idea that if you bombard people with too much information, they just can't do what they need to do with it. And that seems to me to be one of the challenges here, is there's so much information about food, about how to be healthy. How do we cut through this? You're a restaurateur, you're a mother, you think about this all the time. How do you sort of put this into effect and make food healthy?
Well, I think you start with those of us who are the experts start with what we know, which is what these professors are talking about, and that is that vegetables, whole grains, and healthy oils are really, really important. Now, to take those things that a lot of us know how to cook and eat in a really delicious way and translate that into the home is not always easy. Mm-hmm. And so I believe that this needs to be a comprehensive approach that reaches children at a very young age. So kids in school are taught about not, you know, you have to eat this because it's healthy. Rather, this is really fun. This is really interesting. This is really sexy. How can we make these things really interesting to kids by incorporating teaching through all of the disciplines, science, history, geography, in the cafeteria? And by the way, how about home ec? How about cooking again? You know, actually getting kids. And there are a lot of wonderful programs in the country, all over the country, where these kinds of things are happening and proving to be incredibly successful. From the garden into the classroom, into the kitchen, to the table. Kids sit down and eat this food. And it's thrilling for them because they own it.
Good stuff. Walter Willett, you're nodding your head listening to Jody Adams here. all makes sense, what you're saying.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And this is something that should be just the cultural norm, that we eat this kind of balance of healthy foods that Jordi's talking about. And it should be practiced and not just taught in school. And it can be absolutely delicious and more interesting, more varied than the things that kids have usually been fed in schools, for example.
Well, this gets to sort of a question I want to ask you, Walter Willett, as well as you, Professor Escamilla, both of you. I mean, when I look at these diagrams, mm-hmm. the My Plate, which comes from the government, and the Healthy Eating Plate, which comes from Harvard, what I feel like is missing in both of them is exactly this part mm-hmm. of the conversation, and that is, it seems like when you're talking about how to get people to eat healthfully, it's that we're not encouraging people to think about how to make healthy food delicious. And maybe that's not the role of these diagrams, but what do you say to that? Let me start with you, Professor Escamilla.
Well, in fact, if you look at the policy document derived from the Dietary Guidelines for Americans, it clearly recognizes the need to translate this knowledge into practical applications. And I cannot think of a better way of starting than teaching children very early on in life that meals can be prepared in a very healthy and enjoyable manner, and still, you know, we can really like what we are preparing.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, we just saw the heavy hands of the food industry acting last week in the area of foods for schools, that the National Academy of Sciences carefully looked at the issue of standards for foods in schools. They spent a year working on this, bringing together experts from all over the country. And one of the important things was to reduce the very large consumption of potatoes in school menus. And they said not more than twice a week. And the USDA was implementing that standard. And Senator Collins stood up in the Senate and got Congress to...
Senator Collins from Maine.
From
right?
Maine,
big
yes.
Big potato-producing state.
Exactly. And the potato industry is very powerful, and they gutted that it was meant to be replaced to vegetables. Senator Collins said, we can't afford $1 billion a year for other real vegetables, not these starchy potatoes. And that seemed to be too expensive when we're paying $150 billion a year for treating obesity. So we're back to fattening up kids, and because of Congress in this case.
Mm. Listeners, we're talking about healthy eating, how to encourage it, and how to sum it all up in a way that's quick and easy and is easy enough to understand. If you go to RadioBoston.org, you can take a look at these two diagrams, one from the U.S. Department of Agriculture called MyPlate.gov, which replaces that old pyramid, another one from the Harvard School of Public Health called the Healthy Eating Plate. What do you make of them, and what's your advice? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Rafael Perez Escamilla, I want to ask you to respond, if you would, to some of the stuff that Walter Willett's talking about. You were involved in some of these guidelines upon which this new government plate was based on. Did you see, or how did you contend with, or how could you respond to what Walter Willett's talking about, the influence of some of these large food industries on what the government sort of ended up with? And I'm making it clear that you're not the government, but you help provide some of the guidelines.
Yeah. So the way the dietary guidelines development process work, it involves three steps. The first step is a report, the development of a scientific report issued by a 13-member scientific committee that informs the secretaries of health and agriculture about what the evidence tells us in terms of the healthiest dietary patterns that the U.S. Population can follow. And I was a member of that scientific committee. Then the government decides, based on the recommendations from this committee, which ones to take and which ones not to take. And then they develop the policy document that is called the Dietary Guidelines for Americans. And they also develop the consumer brochure that is very much linked in this instance to My Plate.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of the scientific committee, what I can tell you is that it was an incredibly systematic, scientific, transparent, and open process that lasted about 18 months, where every public meeting, every single of the six public meetings, was transcribed and made accessible live to the public, anyone who wanted to listen over the internet. And there were lots of time to receive comments from the public and other stakeholders like industry and interest groups representing diverse audiences. Mm-hmm. Because we used a systematic review process and we make sure that a consensus was reached among the committee members in public, what I can tell you is that my experience in that committee was that there was very little influence from the food industry in terms of the scientific recommendations.
In terms of the recommendations, but what about the result? Let me just ask you straight, were you happy with the total result of My Plate?
Well, I was, but I do have to agree that my preference would have been to not have the representation of the dairy circle the way it is in My Plate. I think that the idea from the Harvard group of including the glass of water in there instead is a very good one, and that would have been my preference. Mm. But overall, I do think both are very compatible if you look and consistent with each other. If you go on the internet and click on My Plate and look at the information that is behind each of those segments in the plate, I think that you will find that the recommendations for healthy oils, for consuming at least half of grains as whole grains, of increasing the consumption of fish, of consuming lean poultry, lean meats, of consuming more beans, nuts, and so on, they're all there. Really don't see a lot of discrepancies in terms of the scientific information being conveyed.
Is that fair, Walter Willett? Let me just ask you, because it's when you do sort of click behind this choosemyplate.gov, mm-hmm. there is a whole lot more information there than what you initially see.
Yes, I think if you're highly motivated and get to that level, there is more information there, and a lot of it's compatible and similar. I think that's quite fair to say, but there are some important differences. The USDA pyramid, it counts potatoes in there as a vegetable, and they clearly metabolically behave like starch and refined starch and don't belong there. And it doesn't really say eat less red meat, except there's a little bit of twice a week you can substitute fish for red meat. And there's no reason that you really need to have any refined grains in the diet. So there's probably 75%, 80% overlap there, but there are some important distinctions that are really, I think, where the USDA version is not consistent with the evidence.
Mm. Jody, I'm wondering if you think that this whole exercise in trying to sort of strip this down is just too limiting, really, when it really comes to thinking about how to make foods not only delicious but healthy, or not only healthy but delicious.
Well, I think there's a reality, and that is that fat, sugar, salt are really yummy. And it's hard to just bring out an icon and say, hey, look, we have this new icon that will teach you how to eat in a healthy way, and forget about the other stuff and focus on this. That's not going to work. It has to be incremental, and it has to be there has to be a comprehensive commitment, I think, on the part of the grown-ups of our country. All of us as grown-ups in this country have an opportunity to have an impact on how kids grow up, what kind of food they have access to, whether there's a supermarket in their neighborhood, whether there's a farmer's market. And many of us live in a very luxurious world where we have access to all kinds of healthy, delicious food, and we have time to cook them, and we know how to cook them. And then there are lots of people who don't have those resources. And I think, as I'm sitting here, and I just read in the paper about the number of kids in New York who are now going to be getting two meals at school. This is increasing right now because there are so many people out of work, and there's just so much problem for families. So it's this perfect opportunity for us to bridge, families and schools and this plate icon. And
it really seems to point to the need to get this right, too.
And to get it right in the schools. Yeah. And as Professor Willett has said, so then we run into this problem about the potatoes. When we're all moving along in a really positive way and suddenly, there's the potato controversy or the pizza controversy, we know what to do. We are the smart grown-ups, and I think shame on us if we can't get something started here, particularly when, as I said, we have this audience with kids eating two meals a day in schools.
Well, speaking of smart grown-ups and this audience, we've got a lot of callers who want to get on this conversation. Let's go to a few of them. Justin is calling from Revere. Hi, Justin.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Listening to the conversation, I've seen my plate, and I understand how it divvies out the portions. I think enough people don't understand what correct portion sizes are, and how much that actually plays into it. I recently lost about 40 pounds using Weight Watchers, and it's a program, but what it really taught me was about what a portion of pasta is or what a portion of milk is, and I don't think that enough people understand that they're overeating portions, that they may know that they're supposed to eat only one serving of red meat, but they might not know what one serving of red meat is.
All right, Justin, we got it. Everything in moderation. I want to keep that point and come back to it, but let me just get another caller in as well. Paul is calling from Dorchester. Hi, Paul.
Hi, I'm a high school teacher and a home ec teacher, and my school just showed me the MyPlate image and compared it to the old pyramid, and immediately I thought that it was lacking. I thought they could have had percentages on how much a portion was in terms of the percentage of grains over meats. I thought that was just too vague, and by not identifying what types of proteins, as someone said earlier, I was just really kind of disappointed with the whole. I thought something more concrete would have been come forth at this point, because I do think it's a big issue with kids. I teach high school, so I sometimes see how they eat, and some of them eat great and really on top of it, but some of them just don't know any better.
All right, Paul, we got it. Rafael Perez Escamilla, I want to come back to you. A couple of callers there are talking about the importance of portion control. If we click behind this choosemyplate.gov, what does it say about portion?
Yeah, the site has quite a bit of information about portion sizes as well, but I think that the main message that I would like to give to the callers is that, again, the plate by itself is just one piece of the puzzle.
Sure.
The other very important piece is teaching the public at large to read food labels. And to be able to read food labels, you need to understand portion sizes and also to estimate with simple approaches the size of the portions that they are consuming.
Sure.
At restaurants and so on. So the portion size estimation has to be taught, has to be learned. It's incredibly important, but you cannot get all of this done just through the plate. You also have to invest in food label education and nutrition education in general, in schools and outside of schools as well.
Walter Willett, let me ask you a question that's related to all of this. And Jody, I want to get you on this as well. It seems like one of the issues here, too, is to embrace a sort of the sort of full diversity of food that's out there. And we were talking in the newsroom about this Cambridge-based nonprofit called Old Ways that spearheaded a 20-year, research project that came up with healthy eating models based on different ethnic groups. Now, they came up with pyramids that looked at the sort of Mediterranean eating model based on anise, fava, feta cheese, lamb, and guinea fowl, an Asian diet pyramid based on bamboo shoots, ginseng, dragon fruit, curry leaves, and duck. Now we're talking, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So this is a piece of the puzzle, isn't it? I mean, to really educate people in terms of what's out there. I mean, it may be their ethnic tradition. It may be embracing someone else's ethnic tradition in a healthy way. Jody. Whoever wants to go first.
Absolutely. I guess I'm not quite sure what the question is.
I'm not sure there was a question.
Yeah. I think that... Yeah, making this. Let's talk about how delicious food is and how to make fish, whole grains, vegetables delicious by adding spices, by adding zest, by adding citrus, by adding a nice vinegar or a little bit of soy sauce or some anchovy. Talk about umami, which is the fifth taste that has a huge impact on whether something is satisfying when you eat it. And if we can teach people about that, and they add a little bit of umami to something, they may not add, as much salt or as much fat or as much butter or something like that. I have in my family, I grew up in a family where we tried lots and lots of things. And as a kid, you know, the calves liver night was not my favorite night, I have to say, you know, the big slab of liver. But we had a rule, and that was you had to have a no thank you helping, which meant you had to taste everything that
was presented. The thing that you might not like, you got to give it a try.
You have to give it a try.
Right.
And I continued that with my children and their friends who came to dinner. As you can imagine, my children were mortified when I said, you're not leaving to the table, kid, until you taste something green. But what that did was to keep the door open all the time. If you feed your child something that you think they say they don't like it, and then you say, well, okay, you know, my child doesn't like cauliflower, and you never offer it again, you've lost an opportunity.
Right. Well, folks, I want to thank you all for coming in. It's a great conversation. Listeners, you can continue the conversation on RadioBoston.org. I want to thank Jody Adams, chef owner at Rialto Restaurant in Cambridge and of the newly opened Trade in the Financial District. Jody, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you, Anthony. I love this conversation.
And Walter, we could go on all day. Walter Willett, professor of epidemiology and nutrition at the Harvard School of Public Health, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Rafael Perez Escamilla, professor of epidemiology and public health at the Yale School of Public Health. Thank you, sir, very much.
Thank you.
Listeners, keep the conversation going online at RadioBoston.org. And for more food news, go to WBUR's food blog, publicradiokitchen.org. Stay with us. Coming up, the Boston Red Sox have chosen Bobby Valentine to be their next manager. Only a Game's Bill Littlefield is with us. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.